they're on the center aisle. And if you would sign in and let us know you're here, that would be awesome. Thank you so much. Kids, where are the kids? There they are. They maybe if it's going to have a chat with you, you guys put a time over here. I'm just going to come on over. Awesome.
Okay, I have some reasonable people. What's a reasonable amount of time for a child's chat? And they said 40 minutes.
Sorry.
If I go over 40 minutes, somebody will make me mad.
I
just said four.
Four.
Missed it by that one. Now, for free cup of coffee. Oh, wait. Free cup of water. Does anybody know what this is? Look at this. Ready? Good. 2.5 billion. Or 41 million. Or, that's upside down. 690,000 hours. Or 29,000 days. Anybody know what that represents? Think about it. What lasts for 29,000 days? Anybody? Yes? A shark? Anybody? Anyone? Anyone? This is what this represents. Your entire life. So you will live approximately, on the average, not counting Jack Cornino, about 2.5 billion seconds. Up, second one five, up, second one five, another second one five. Okay. And then I want you to think a little bit. You live about 29,000 days. This is average lifespan of American, about 79 years. That's the average. Some people live shorter, some people live longer, but on average, you got about 2.5 billion seconds. And then think about what are some words that you use to describe time? Like, what is your favorite day of the year? Anybody have a favorite day? Halloween, okay. Do you have a favorite holiday? Yes? Christmas. Yeah, a lot of people say Christmas. How about the day you sing Happy Bon Bon? Is that one of your favorite days? Okay. These are some words we use to express time. You probably will use many of these words today. You can say today, yesterday, tomorrow, next year, last year, my birthday, the sunset, the sunrise. I can't read upside down. Clock watching. Anniversaries, holidays, the morning, the afternoon, the night, day. Pretty soon. Do you ever say pretty soon? When your mom says, "When are you gonna blah blah blah?" Say pretty soon. Hold on. Wait a minute. Just a minute. So constantly we're talking about time, and I just want you to think about that. You have 2.5 billion seconds, and they go by quickly, and you can't take them back. So how do you use your time? About a third of your life is sleeping. And a third of your life is either getting ready to go to school, or going to school, or coming home from school, getting ready to get a little older, getting ready to go to work, going to work, working, coming home from work, right? 30 seconds. Okay. Thank you. So I want you to think about time and how you use the time that's given to you as a gift from God. Think of it as you have only so much time, and how will you use it for the best, for the common good? Pray with me. Thank you for the gift and that we have so much time, and help us to be balanced, sometimes to do nothing, and sometimes to be industrious, and to make sure we take care of our bodies. Jesus, amen.
Amen.
Read it for you.
son.
Thank you for that. You guys are awesome. You are. You guys have to look forward to your cheers. You can work on your clipboards and all the fun things. And then Wiggleworms, who is our Wiggleworm volunteers today? Jan and Will, so they're going to head over to the back room. You guys can play.
Hey, I mean, kudos to Jan and Will for staying out and
welcoming
me.
Oh, yay. So this morning, our message series is called Return, and we're going to continue the message series this morning. Our Return series is a return to seven ancient spiritual practices that have been passed down and handed down to us from Judaism. And on Ash Wednesday during the weeks of Lent, we're going to study a different spiritual practice. So the first practice that we looked at was the practice of fasting, which is choosing not to eat for a very specific amount of time. And that choice is made because in that moment, there's a sacredness to a moment. And so there's a choice, a conscious choice that is made to refrain from food because it's as if eating would interrupt the sacredness of the moment. So that's fasting. And we looked at the different reasons why we would fast for clarity, for discernment, in terms of fasting in prayer, combining those two spiritual practices, or in the practice of social justice. So, for example, our youth had just engaged in a practice of fasting for 30 hours, as part of a 30-hour famine, to support World Vision, which supports programs around the world for education, health, and food around the world. So, the interesting thing that I noticed as these kids are fasting, I took them to a grocery store to do a supermarket challenge to see how they could feed a family on a budget of $15 for a week, and the entire time, so they're 24 hours into their fast, and they are hungry. And at one point, they looked at Kelly and I, and they said, "We get it now. We get it now." Because they knew there were hungry children in the world. You can know something, but when you fast in solidarity with others, and you feel what they would feel, it moves your heart to compassion. So it's an integration of your head, your body, your heart, your spirit. And that's what these spiritual practices intend to do for us. So last week we returned to the practice of fixed hour prayer or the daily office. And this is something that comes from Jewish practice of praying 5 times a day. And so this past week, we encouraged one another to be in prayer 4 times daily, to set a schedule based on the rhythm of your life and your days. And I'm wondering, what did you do? Did anyone engage in the practice? Yeah, how'd it go?
I tried.
You tried. That's excellent. So how'd it go?
If I could have remembered the time, I needed an alarm to remind myself. So I would catch it.
You needed an alarm. I set an alarm. I knew I needed an alarm. So the beginning of the week, I was doing really, really well. Friday and Saturday, I didn't do so well with the kids and the fasting, but that made it harder. But yeah, an alarm helped. Anyone else engage in the practice over the last week? How did you do? It's a mindfulness. It's hard to do. I see some head shaking and some nodding and some shaking, but it's a challenge. So I would encourage you to keep up with that. Maybe set an alarm. Even if it's just noticing. So I pray for 5 minutes 4 times a day. And just 5 minutes. But it was that mindfulness of stopping what I'm doing to take that opportunity to pray. And it does take a lot of discipline. And so today we're going to talk about the discipline of Sabbath. And I'm going to start by talking about Sabbath that is really simple in theory and it's really difficult practice. And I'm saying that really from my own experience because this is the spiritual discipline that I am absolutely the worst at. I'm just going to own it up front. Sabbath is simple in theory. So it happens in an event of time. Sabbath comes in the rhythm of a week. It is for Jews, the seventh day of the week. It's the Sabbath day. For Christians, we practice it on the first day of the week, on Sunday. It's a mark of our identity as followers of Jesus who rose from the dead on the first day of the week. So Sabbath is a rhythm in time. It's a rhythm in the time of the week. It comes in an endless cycle. Each week, it's new. Sabbath, Sabbath, Sabbath. And yet there's another aspect of Sabbath that is beyond definition, and it is the aspect that it helps us to live into our understanding of time. So I'm not good about practicing Sabbath. I know that there's a Sabbath in my head, comes up here. It's really simple. So I was raised in a family where work was valued. I like to say that I am in a recovery group of my own of overfunctioning workaholics. And well, there may be others, but I like to think of mine as a friend. So you may also be in recovery from being an overfunctioning workaholic. Maybe you need a support group. So this really comes from my family origin, and I will own it. So I grew up in a family where work was overvalued. Work helped me survive my family origin in its own dysfunction. Every family has its own dysfunction, and work was a way to overcome. I worked at school. I worked to take care of my parents. I worked to take care of my siblings. And the harder I worked, the more I was rewarded. The better my grades, the more scholarships I could get. It was a transactional piece of my life, and I realized that I worked more and more and more and more and more, I could get rewarded for this. So by the time I'm in my early 20s, and I'm going to school, and I'm working full-time, my boss loves me, by the way, because I'm working 7 days a week, and I'm willing to work 10 or 12 hours a day. I am an absolute workhorse. I'm promoted for this. The culture loves this. Everywhere I go, people are praising me, and I'm getting tons of affirmation because I am willing to work myself down. This is not good. Being a workaholic helped me describe my family. It also did wonders in feeding my ego. But it comes at a cost, and a tremendous cost. I sacrificed my soul in favor of becoming a workaholic. I lost my creative energy. I sacrificed relationships. I lost a lot of friendships at work. I found myself in conflict with my own family. I lost sleep. I was tired all the time. And the worst thing was, and I will totally own this, because I don't know that a lot of people will, but I will own this. The more I worked, the more judgmental I became of people who took time off. Because what was happening is the one thing I knew I wanted and needed most, it was like this like awful anger that I had, like a jealousy that was within me. And it was really hurting me and my relationships with others. I realized that I was using work to forget about my own problems and the things that I needed to do, that soul-searching work that I needed to do. Because it was like an addiction that I kept going and going and going. And you know what was bad is I recognized this when I was in seminary, because the more I worked when I was in seminary, the most spiritual place where I'm really supposed to be digging deep into the heart of my soul, I realized even there, I was being praised for the overworking. It was awful. And it was spiritually killing me. Sabbath is one of the most misunderstood practices because I think it really forces us in our culture to resist that overworking. Because everywhere, we are tempted to overwork ourselves. Why do you think we resist rest culturally? Because we do. We resist it on a lot of levels. If you are a person who resists resting, what are some of the factors? Why do you resist rest?
Okay. Because we're defined often by what we accomplish and what we earn. Whether that's physical property or money, but we're defined that way so often. What do you do for a living? There's lots of the elevators that we don't talk all the time. What do we do for a living?
We're defined by our work. It gives us an identity when we are working. You feel guilty if you're being lazy, like as if rest means lazy. Yes. Alyssa?
It gives us too much time to think, and it's easier if we don't think.
It gives us time to think. Yeah. Like it's easier, like you can ignore your problems if you're not thinking. Right. What else? Why do we resist rest? Cindy?
I'm feeling what she said too.
And resist those feelings.
You're busy.
You can hide those feelings that you're feeling. Busy. Yes. What else?
Well, there's stuff to get done, and you're afraid that it won't get done.
You're afraid that it won't get done, all this stuff that won't get done. Yeah, that's another piece.
Ashley? It's impossible to sit there sitting still doing nothing doesn't mean you're that. Like, you can't stop.
Right. You can't stop it sometimes, even when you're still. So there's lots of reasons why. We don't stop to rest. And it's interesting because every once in a while I'll hear someone still say, you know, wouldn't it be great if we just have the blue laws again? Do you all remember the blue laws? Like, if we just had the blue laws, we would all be able to stop and rest. And I think that's interesting because it's almost as if, you know, if somehow someone else would say and impose like a structure around us and say, okay, I can take it now. But I don't think that that would work either. I mean, realistically, it's not going to work in our culture these days to just, you know, set up and stop everything. But I do think it will be more helpful for us to return to the practice of Sabbath. And I think it's the practice itself which can help guide us and nurture us into a new identity. And I think it helps us to live more fully into our identity as children of God. I think practicing Sabbath also helps us to reframe our time and how we use our time, how we understand time, and how we choose to live in it. So think about time. How do you use time? Dave, what was that number? 600,000? 600,000 minutes? 41.5 million minutes. You've got 41.5 million minutes. So what are you going to do with your 41.5 million minutes? We all have a way. That's the only way you'll have your own. Think about how you use time, or how you think about time. Are you like me, and do you have every minute of every day scheduled? No. Oh. Do you practice Sabbath? Yes. Do you think of time as a commodity to be used and traded, to be bought and sold? And do you think of time as something that you can shape to your own will? No? So here's the thing, culturally, because I think it's hard to do what Marty does, which is to not get kind of pulled into that understanding of time. But since the Industrial Revolution, more and more and more, people have thought of time as a commodity, something that we can bend to our own will, where we see the clock as a machine that we can master. So it's like, I do this now, it's even worse, I'm going to have an iPhone and an iCalendar and a GPS. I wait for the thing to go off on the GPS. Your GPS is going to tell me exactly how many minutes it's going to take me to get from point A to point B. And I'm going to make sure that I'm not running late. I'm going to make sure I'm nailing it in terms of the time that I can master this. But what it does is it leaves no room in the margins. I am rushing from one thing to the next thing, and I'm running and running and running. And I'm hurried in my own agenda, not keeping good use of time. And I lose track of the spiritual discipline to set the rhythm and flow of my days, to pay attention to relationships, to pay attention to what is possible in each moment, and because I've scheduled myself so out of time. And the only, I'll admit too, I will blame the clock. I will blame the clock if I am late, as if I didn't schedule myself in the right way, instead of taking ownership over my own spiritual discipline of living in the flow of time. When I treat time as a commodity, I lose sight of what it truly is. Time is a gift. The Bible begins with God the Creator creating time, day and night, sun and moon, plants and animals, and then God rests. So let's read this story together from Genesis. Heaven and earth were finished, down to the last detail. By the seventh day, God had finished his work. On the seventh day, he rested from all his work. God blessed the seventh day. He made it a holy day, because on that day, he rested from his work. All were created in God his own. This is the story of how it all started, of heaven and earth when they were created. God is the creator, and God's identity is rooted in the creation. And it's not just in the act of creating itself, but it's in the creating and the resting. And then God commands us to live into this example of living and working and creating and resting in the Ten Commandments. So let's read this together. Observe the Sabbath day and be holy. Work 6 days, do everything you need to do. But the seventh day is the Sabbath to God, your God. Don't do any work. Not you, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your servant, nor your maid, nor your animals, not even the foreign guest visiting in your town. For in 6 days God made heaven and earth and sea, and everything in them. He rested on the Sabbath day. Therefore, God blessed the Sabbath day. He set it apart as a holy day. Sabbath practice begins with God's very identity, the one who creates and rests, and our identity as God's children is the call of that same kind of creativity and that pattern of work and rest. It is about balance between our time and our play, our work and our play, our delight and joy in creation, and investing in our relationships and taking time to rest and to be and to just settle and to understand and to connect. Sabbath is a resistance to our culture, it's a resistance to our egos, to change how we think about time as a commodity, and Sabbath helps to break through that endless work cycle and to remind us that work is not all there is, but that there is also joy and play and delight in just simply being. So return to Sabbath practice honors creation through rest by welcoming diversity, to encouraging creativity, and seeking social justice. So we're going to talk about those four aspects of Sabbath practice today. So first I want to talk about Sabbath rest. And So I want to talk together about what are some of the practices of Sabbath rest that you engage in that you would like to share in the community. So how do you practice Sabbath rest? Bob.
networks that the Dunham has, obviously, and a lot of the practices that you're trying to relate to us over the number of weeks are all restorational. And even fasting gives your body a rest. And Marty is an expert on autophagy there, so you can talk to her about it. But that's a way of your body restoring itself. Prayer is a way of restoring it to yourself. Sue and I really have set a day aside on Thursday to be our Sabbath. And you wouldn't think that as busy as we are that we could do that, but we actually find ourselves by going out to plant. Like a week ago, we went down to see the workers at Longyard. Thank you. And I need to fascinate my brain. Anyway, so it is just for us to be able to go and play and just enjoy our time together and put everything else aside actually makes us more efficient than the other 6 days.
It makes you more efficient than the other 6 days. I think it helps. So Sabbath rest helps to root you in your own being, your own identity as a child of God, and to connect in that very deep way. And I think it helps you to prioritize the important things in your life on the other 6 days.
It makes you more efficient.
It makes you more efficient, it gives you more clarity. It's, right? So I love theater.
Well, in the VeggieTales children's movies, there are the pirates who do nothing.
The pirates who do nothing.
And they're kind of a role model, driving afternoon, doing something constantly, always, driving among the work, and it's like, doing nothing.
Nice. The fire is going to go out there. I totally, I'm stealing that. Tammy.
Saturday, Sunday are the new days. Sunday is the busy day of holiday.
So what day do you take as your Sabbath?
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Tuesday and Wednesday. And mine's Thursday. It doesn't have to be Saturday or Sunday, right? And it has to flow with the rhythm of your life. And that's wonderful. Rit-
shutting down.
talking to my husband. Oh, no, he says you can't go out. You can't go out.
That's beautiful.
I start shutting down. I just want to go to my body. And if people are really ugly, if I get in my sleep, it is written on the front of my face. I mean, it's just, I just check out.
But that's a perfect example. Like, you're listening and paying attention to your natural rhythms. And then when your spouse says, if it's not like it's time for jeopardy, oh, I get caught up in that. That's a beautiful example. So now I'm wondering, how do we break that clock, our dependence on the clock, when everything is connected to the clock?
It's really hard because even society these days is, when we were done with Christmas, we already have like Valentine's Day, Valentine's Day, like everything is rushed. It's like, oh my god, now we have to use the holidays. I mean, you finish Halloween, well, Christmas is already there. Now you start to see spring stuff out there for Easter, and it's summer. You know, it's kind of hard.
It is hard. Yeah, it is hard.
And why
everybody
do a survey of all the people last weekend, and they like say, we have a clock in every room, perhaps except one. And there's four of them. There's one with her eyes, and there's one that's right. And on daylight savings, it's like, oh, it's a lot of stuff in me. And there's no reminder.
Yeah, it hits you how much the clock rules our lives, and we don't fall into those natural rhythms. For some reason, I think that it wasn't, there's a group or a people or a religion or a practice of covering the clocks. And I can't think of who would do that. Since on Mark time, it might be in the time of grief or in Jewish tradition where they cover the clocks. And is that, when do they do that? It's a time of mourning, right? But it's, I'm wondering if that might not be a way to get back to those natural rhythms, to just cover our clocks. And that might get me in trouble for a week, but would it encourage rest? This is a question.
It's a strange thing, but if I want
key round clocks.
And I had one, it was 4 to 7 minute clock. And when the clock stopped running, I don't know if you just, it could never be here on Monday morning, but what if it happened to stop on the weekend? It's just quite comfortable.
Let it go.
Yeah. That's sort of connected.
But yeah, it is connected to that practice. You know, just taking that Sabbath and living with your natural rhythm. So another aspect of Sabbath is creativity. God is creator, encouraging us to play on Sabbath, to tap into our spiritual side and spiritual energy. One of the practices that I have done the last year, and I committed myself to doing this Lent, is my creative side. I love libraries, and they are beautiful creative spaces for me, so I'm volunteering at the library every Saturday for just a couple of hours to just tap into my creative side. What are some of the things that you practice for play, for creativity in your life for Saturday?
Gardening.
Cooking.
Crochet.
Sleeping in. That can be great. I would encourage every single person to make themselves as an artist. We are all artists. We all have creative energy. Being created in the image of God as a creator, Sabbath play and creativity is a beautiful way of reconnecting with Sabbath. Another aspect of Sabbath is welcoming diversity. So let's read this short passage from Isaiah together. There it is. All right. As for the outsider, who now follow me, working for me, loving my name, and wanting to be my servants, all who keep Sabbath and don't defile it, holy cows to my covenant, I'll bring them to my holy mountain
and give them joy in my house of prayer. They'll be welcome to worship the same as the insiders, to keep burnt offerings and sacrifices to my altar. Oh, yes, my house of worship will be known as a house of prayer for all people. The decree of your master, God himself, who gathers in the exiles of Israel, I will gather others also, gather them in with those already gathered. God welcomes diversity and Sabbath practice. It's all of those who practice Sabbath are welcomed in to God and into relationship with God. And finally, the last aspect of Sabbath that I want to talk about briefly is Sabbath and resistance and social justice. Sabbath practice is a social justice response. Like thinking about when we travel upon Europe, where we see people working 7 days a week and 10-hour days, and they are still living in poverty. They don't have the opportunity to practice Sabbath. The 30-hour famine was a way of practicing and resisting social justice. But this, like thinking about Sabbath and taking that intentional time on that 7 days a week to rest, it resists that need and that drive to work 7 days a week. Do you ever practice Sabbath as resistance towards social justice? Anyone? Another way of thinking about Sabbath practice. This one is harder. Pepsi, my father-in-law practices Sabbath, and he feels very badly for all the people who are forced to work on their Sabbath. And a lot of people, he won't buy anything on Sunday. Thanksgiving Day and having that on Sabbath, that's a great example of thinking about people who are compelled to work that day instead of having the opportunity to rest, to be in relationship with their friends and family, and to be able to connect in that way. Yes, Kelly?
The blue light bulb, a lot of that was to help the Jewish people that have their Sabbath on another day.
Right. Right, and that's why I think it's more helpful to think about time and setting your time into your own rhythm of Sabbath. Because I think if we get stuck on the day that we're all practicing Sabbath together, I think we can get stuck there. And I think to help, like how Mario was talking about the rhythm of the flow and to live into our rest, he was saying about setting a time aside for rest, for creativity, for play, for diversity, for all of those things that are involved in Sabbath, if we can set it in our own natural rhythm and flow of our work week, right? And it's a gift, because not everybody has the opportunity to practice Sabbath. So I think that's the tension, but if we can set it for ourselves and still live into that practice, I think that's what we're being called to. Does that help make sense? Yeah, because it's a challenge, because we don't want to mess with anybody else's Sabbath either, right? So this week, let's practice Sabbath. Let's return to the practice of Sabbath. Here are kids at play reminding us to practice Sabbath. And I invite you to return to this ancient practice to take intentional time to rest, to reflect, to just be in the presence of God, to tap into your own creative energy, to delight in the day, to seek justice for those who don't have the opportunity to practice Sabbath. But find the rhythm of your days. And at the end of your work week, open yourself, connect your heart, mind, body, and spirit, and return to this children of God, because it's amazing when you do these things, how it opens your heart to how God, and how Paul was saying earlier today, to that rest, to the renewal, to the wonder and the light of who we are as God's children and who we are.